Hi, and thanks for joining me for Stories from the Phoenix New Times. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer, Chip Hawbrook. First on this week's program, these 37 abortion laws are still on the books in Arizona. The story was written by Morgan Fisher and was posted on February 7th. In November, Arizonans overwhelmingly voted to enshrine the right to an abortion in the state's constitution. End of story. Everyone's happy, right? Wrong. In fact, Arizona's 15-week ban on the procedure is still on the books under ARS 36-2322 as a lawsuit to invalidate it works through the courts. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays has said she will not enforce that ban until that case is decided, allowing Arizona providers to provide abortions up to 24 weeks or up to fetal viability. Otherwise, providers could face jail time as ARS 36-2324, which is also still on the books, imposes a Class 6 felony on providers for performing an abortion after 15 weeks. A Class 6 felony conviction could mean 4 months to 2 years in jail. Those aren't the only abortion restrictions that remain the law in Arizona. There are many more still on the books, many that are onerous, some that ban things that don't happen anyway, and even some that make a bit of sense. For any of these to go away, a court must deem them unconstitutional, or the legislature must repeal them. Here's a rundown of 37 remaining abortion laws in Arizona. 24-hour waiting period. Under ARS 36-2153, patients must wait 24 hours from their first appointment before receiving an abortion. At that first appointment, they must be provided with the name of the physician who is providing their care, the nature of the treatment, potential risks, alternative treatment options, and the probable gestation age of the unborn child, according to the statute. Then, the 24-hour waiting period begins, taking up unnecessary time for the provider and patient. If the provider performs an abortion without checking the gestational age, except in cases of medical emergency, they can be charged with a Class 1 misdemeanor under ARS 36-2159. That could mean up to 6 months in jail and a fine of up to $2,500. Must provide alternatives to abortion. During that initial appointment, abortion providers also must direct patients to a website that lists abortion alternatives, according to ARS 36-2158. If the patient is receiving an abortion because the fetus has a non-fetal condition, they must be provided with up-to-date, evidence-based information concerning the range of outcomes for individuals living with the diagnosed condition, including physical development, educational, and psychosocial outcomes. ARS 36.2153.01 also specifically outlines that the Arizona Department of Health Services must provide a list on its website of public and private agencies that assist with pregnancy or childbirth. The list cannot include any agency that refers, performs, induces, prescribes, or provides any means for abortion. No public money for abortion. Under ARS 36-195.02, Arizona state health plans can only cover abortion in cases when the life of the mother is at stake or when the mother has severely compromised health. Additionally, under ARS 26-196.05, Arizona cannot enter into a contract with a person that performs non-federally qualified abortions, which is basically any abortion. Abortion cannot be covered by insurance. Under ARS 36-2907, abortion is not covered by insurance policies for public employees, or by Medicaid. The only exception is when the life of the patient is at risk or the patient has severely compromised health. Additionally, insurance covered family planning services do not include abortion or abortion counseling, according to ARS 362989. Religiously affiliated employers can exclude abortion from their covered health care because providing or paying for coverage of the specific items or services is contrary to the religious beliefs of the religiously affiliated employer offering the plan, according to ARS 202329. Such employers cannot exclude prescription contraceptives, however, but can require insured employees to pay first and then submit a claim to the insurer along with evidence that the prescription is not for a purpose covered by the objection, under ARS 201404. Providers cannot use telehealth. Telehealth appointments skyrocketed during the COVID-19 pandemic, but abortion providers in Arizona could not use them, under ARS 363604. This ban on telehealth appointments also includes that initial appointment the patients have to attend, thus requiring two in-person appointments. It also extends to medication abortions. No mailing abortion pills. Under ARS 362160, an abortion-inducing drug can only be provided by a qualified physician, and they cannot be provided via courier, delivery, or mail service. Parental consent. For a minor to receive abortion care, they must have the consent of their parent under ARS 362152. Specifically, the physician must have received a written and notarized consent from one of the minor's parents or the minor's guardian or conservator. If a minor wishes to receive an abortion without the consent of their parent, they can petition the court. After doing so, the court shall hold a hearing and then issue a ruling within 48 hours of the petition being filed. If a physician performs an abortion for a minor without a petition from the court or parental consent, they can be charged with a Class 1 misdemeanor. Ultrasound requirement. Under ARS 362156, a patient must receive an ultrasound 24 hours before obtaining an abortion. The physician must provide the patient the opportunity to view the active ultrasound image and hear the heartbeat if available. Further, the patient must certify in writing that she had the opportunity to review the ultrasound. Fetal viability. A physician cannot provide an abortion of a viable fetus unless the procedure is necessary to preserve the life or health of the woman under ARS 36-2301.01. The statute isn't in conflict with the new constitutional amendment, which provides the fundamental right to an abortion up to viability. However, the statute also requires that the physician must state in writing the available methods and techniques considered and their reasoning behind the chosen method. Ban on sex or race selection. Except in a medical emergency, an abortion cannot be performed because of the race or sex of the fetus, under ARS 13-3603.02. A person who knowingly performs an abortion for this reason can be charged with a Class 6 felony, which could result in 4 months to 2 years of prison time for a first offender. Lots of clinic requirements. Arizona requires a lot of strict, unnecessary, and burdensome standards related to their physical plant, equipment, and staffing at abortion clinics, according to the Guttmacher Institute. Under ARS 36449.03, clinics must have adequate private space specifically designed for interviewing, counseling, and medical evaluations. Physicians and medical directors at clinics must have additional licenses. Additionally, an abortion clinic must meet the same licensure requirements as a healthcare institution under ARS 36449.02. For surgical abortions, the physician must have admitting privileges at a healthcare institution within 30 miles of the clinic, and they must remain at the clinic until all patients are stable and ready to leave the recovery room. Appropriate emergency resuscitative and life support equipment and services must be available in case the patient or a viable fetus needs to go to the hospital. Additionally, the physician must discuss with the patient immune globulin to be available 72 hours after the procedure. If the patient refuses, the physician must get a record of that refusal. The physician must make a good faith effort to contact the patient within 24 hours after a surgical abortion. Abortion reporting requirements. Under ARS 36-2161, the facilities that perform abortions, such as a hospital or clinic, must submit a report to the Arizona Department of Health Services about each abortion performed. If a physician provides care to a patient in need of medical care due to complications with an abortion, the physician must file a report with the Arizona Department of Health Services under ARS 36-2162. Under ARS 36-2162.01, physicians must submit a report to the Arizona Department of Health Services about how informed consent for an abortion was obtained. Patient confidentiality is required in this report. The patient's name, Social Security number, driver's license number, and insurance information cannot be included in any reports under ARS 36-2163. Death certificate. A hospital, abortion clinic, physician, or midwife must submit a fetal death certificate to the state within 7 days of each fetal death occurring. After a gestational period of 20 completed weeks, or if the unborn child weighs more than 350 grams, under ARS 36-329. Born alive measures. If an abortion is performed and a human fetus or embryo is delivered alive, the physician must use all available means to promote, preserve, and maintain the life of such a fetus or embryo, under ARS 36-2322. The statute doesn't technically interfere with the constitutional amendment, but it does legislate something that almost never occurs in the first place. Laws like this have been passed by GOP legislatures across the country and by the U.S. Congress several times, mostly to incite emotions and seed doubt about abortion providers. Partial birth abortion. Under ARS 13-3603.01, if a physician performs a partial birth abortion and kills a human fetus, they can be found guilty of a Class 6 felony and can be fined or imprisoned for up to 2 years or both. Similar to the Born Alive law, partial birth abortion laws are meant to stir up fear around abortion and ban something that doesn't happen. Right to refuse participation. A physician or other hospital staff is not required to facilitate or participate in the medical or surgical procedures that will result in the abortion on moral or religious grounds, under ARS 36-2154. Research bans. Under ARS 36-2302, a human fetus or embryo resulting from an abortion cannot be used in a study or experiment. Additionally, ARS 35-196.94 outlines that state, federal, or university money can't be used toward research projects that involve fetal remains from an abortion or human somatic cell nuclear transfer. Non-physician ban. Only physicians, not physician assistants or nurses, can perform abortions under ARS 36-2155. A physician assistant also cannot prescribe, dispense, or administer medication intended to perform or induce an abortion under ARS 32-2532. no payroll deductions for abortion organizations. Under ARS 38612, no payroll salary deductions can be made for state officers or employees for making charitable financial contributions to an organization that performs an abortion or maintains or operates a facility where an abortion is performed. No abortions at Arizona Board of Regents facilities or universities. Under ARS 15-1630, abortions cannot be performed at facilities under the jurisdiction of the Arizona Board of Regents, such as state universities, unless to save the life of the patient. Further, ARS 15-115.01 specifically states that a facility run by or on the property of a public educational institution may not perform an abortion unless it's to save the life of the patient. No teaching about abortion in schools. No school district or charter school in Arizona may endorse or provide financial or instructional program support to any program that doesn't present childbirth or adoption as the preferred option to abortion under ARS 15-115. No abortion advertising. Under ARS 13-3605, a person who advertises any medicine or services for facilitating an abortion can be found guilty of a misdemeanor. No abortions provided at medical clinics. Under ARS 48-2212, medical clinics cannot provide a medical or surgical abortion. Here's a story written by T.J. LeHeru and posted on February 6th. R. Kelly Gallego ready to more aggressively resist Trump. For the last several weeks, Arizona Senators Ruben Gallego and Mark Kelly had fallen in line with the Trump administration, voting for Donald Trump's cabinet picks more than almost any other Democrats in the Senate. But Thursday, with another controversial Trump nominee under consideration, Kelly and Gallego took a stand. Russell Vaught is Trump's pick to head the Office of Management and Budget. He's also one of the architects of Project 2025, a radical plan by Washington's leading extreme conservatives to dismantle and reshape much of the federal government. One of the most notorious bureaucratic officials from the first Trump term, Vaught blocked aid Congress approved for Ukraine and recovery efforts in Puerto Rico after Hurricanes Irma and Maria. Vaught's desire for Trump to take greater control of spending from Congress, outlined in a 2021 memo, directly contradicts the U.S. Constitution and other laws. A Republican aide also told Politico that an effort in the administration's earliest days to freeze spending for thousands of key government programs has Russ's name written all fucking over it. The order to freeze funds was blocked by a judge, but states have claimed Trump is not abiding by the decision. Additionally, the Elon Musk-led infiltration of several key federal agencies has raised significant concerns about the Trump administration's efforts to impose spending restrictions by fiat. To push back, Senate Democrats, many of whom have drawn criticism for being slow-footed and ineffectual in the wake of Trump's and Musk's onslaught against the operation of the federal government, burned the midnight oil early Thursday morning by holding the floor for a 30-hour filibuster to protest Vaught's nomination. Gallego and Kelly were among them. Russell Vaught is a danger to the United States, Gallego said. He wants to cut help from the poorest Americans to make sure there is enough money left over to give it to the richest Americans. Kelly opened fire on Vaught's attempts to override the spending decisions of Congress and weaken the government's system of checks and balances. This is what an unelected, unaccountable bureaucrat looks like, Kelly said. Agree with these programs or disagree with them, Congress, Republicans, and Democrats voted for them. While Arizona's two senators have opposed some of Trump's most controversial nominees, including Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, Phoenix New Times reported Tuesday that Gallego and Kelly had been in a concerning lockstep with their GOP counterparts during the young legislative session. Gallego had voted with the GOP 80% of the time on cabinet positions and to approve the problematic Laken Riley Act, while Kelly had done so 70% of the time. New tone? With Republicans in control of both houses of Congress, those votes are among the few tools Gallego and Kelly have to oppose the agenda of the Trump administration. Instead of deploying the preferred tactic of progressives to delay and obstruct in order to slow down the Trump agenda, Gallego and Kelly have mostly operated as if things are normal at the Capitol. At least for Vought's nomination, that changed. We're supposed to be here to make government work for the American people. I'll sit down with anyone to make that happen. But the plan seems to be to break the federal government in order to help rich people, Kelly said. I can't get on board with that. Gallego also said Vought was on a crusade to tear down the federal government, noting that in the past, Vought showed complete disregard for democratic institutions and proposed cutting Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security while giving tax cuts to the wealthy. The OMB director must believe in the fundamental mission of the federal government, which is to serve the people, Gallego said. Vought, by contrast, has spent his career trying to dismantle government institutions and push an extreme agenda that benefits only a select few. Gallego claimed Vought's policies would undermine national security and erode public confidence in government. He also made a bit of a Freudian slip in line with his near-rubber-stamp support for Trump's picks. The Senate and the American people must stand firm against this administration, he said, before correcting himself to against this confirmation. The difference between opposing a confirmation and opposing the administration is a consequential one. It remains to be seen whether Gallego and Kelly and Senate Democrats in general are adopting a more aggressive strategy or whether this was a temporary backstiffening. Notably, several controversial nominees will soon be voted on in the Senate, including Tulsi Gabbard, whom Kelly has already vocally opposed, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Spokespeople for each senator did not respond to New Times questions about whether to expect a more combative tone going forward. But there are more Trump nominees due for confirmation votes, so Gallego and Kelly will have to make their perspectives known on a key question. Is it back to business as usual in Washington, or is the house on fire? Sheriff Sheridan tried to cancel first court-ordered community meeting. This next story was written by Morgan Fisher and posted on February 6th. Newly elected Maricopa County Sheriff Jerry Sheridan wanted to end his first community meeting before it even began. Once a quarter for the last decade, the sheriff has been required to meet with community members to discuss reforms the agency has been required to make as a result of the civil rights lawsuit, Melendrez v. Arpaio, which found that then-Sheriff Joe Arpaio had been racially profiling people while conducting immigration sweeps in Latino neighborhoods. Those quarterly meetings are also attended by lawyers from the U.S. Department of Justice and Robert Warshaw, the court-appointed monitor who oversees the sheriff's office progress. Wednesday night's meeting in Guadalupe was Sheridan's first since being sworn in earlier this year. It promised some drama. As Arpaio's former secondhand man, whose name is on the Brady list after he lied in federal court, Sheridan doesn't have a sterling history with the agency. But Sheridan didn't seem too keen on facing the wrath of the community he once again serves. According to court documents, 2 hours before the meeting was set to take place, the court held an emergency telephone meeting because Sheridan's office had requested a cancellation. As justification, the sheriff's office cited protests regarding immigration policies of the new administration in Glendale and at the state capitol earlier in the day. The sheriff's office wasn't aware of any specific threats to the community meeting and admitted there was no indication of a crowd or any other protest activity, court documents showed. Still, the department was concerned that the focus of the meeting could become uncontrollable and could go beyond that authorized by court order. Despite the agency's shaky concerns, U.S. District Judge G. Murray Snow didn't let Sheridan off the hook. In a ruling, he ordered that the meeting continue as planned. Attended by roughly 100 people who filled cafeteria benches at Frank Elementary School, Sheridan's worries were a non-issue. Around 10 people stood in the back of the school's lunch program holding protest signs, including one that read, "Deport Jerry Sheridan." However, that isn't uncommon for these meetings. In the fall, before the last monitoring meeting under former Sheriff Russell Skinner, organizers protested against Sheridan in Proposition 314. I want bias-free policing. Despite trying to get out of being there, Sheridan tried to reassure community members that his agency will continue to work with the monitor team, the plaintiff's counsel, to comply with the court order, he said. The judge wants bias-free policing, and I want bias-free policing. Your deputies are working hard to provide you with bias-free policing. Orshaw shared that the agency has made progress toward reaching compliance with the court order, which includes a nice reduction in the number of backlogged complaints the sheriff's office has received. But Orshaw made clear that Sheridan must be part of the solution rather than the problem, as has been the case before. A measure of a police agency is their capacity to police themselves, and historically, that has been an issue that we, the court, have had with MCSO, Orshaw said after Sheridan spoke. These can't just be words, these actually have to be actions. Many community members were far from convinced by Sheridan's short speech. And while Sheridan asked them to give me that chance to show you through my actions, considering his long history with the sheriff's office, many believe he's more than gotten that chance already. One by one, speakers stood in line to speak to Sheridan directly. Joel Cornejo, a 28-year-old organizer at Simias, Arizona, told Sheridan that his department is racist, period. And if you target our community, we will do the same thing to your career. Others took the opportunity to speak on their personal experiences with the sheriff's office. Moncelia Enriquez shared the story of her 16-year-old son being pulled over by sheriff's deputies and said she was never given an explanation as to why. Sheridan listened, but Enriquez later said it didn't seem like it mattered to him. His body language is like, "I'm just here, I don't really care," she told Phoenix New Times about Sheridan after the meeting. "I don't think he has done anything to reflect anything positive, and that he can be trusted." New Times attempted to speak to Sheridan after the meeting about the progress he hopes to make at the agency and about his attempts to wiggle out of the meeting, but was unsuccessful. At the meeting's conclusion, he quickly slipped out, apparently eager to be done with it as soon as possible. Next, a story written by L.M. Boyd of the Arizona Mirror and posted on the New Times website on February 6th. GOP lawmaker wants to make pipe bombs, machine guns, legal in Arizona. A Republican lawmaker wants to repeal the Arizona law banning people from owning machine guns, silencers, sawed-off shotguns, and even pipe bombs, and other homemade explosive devices. While federal law would still sharply restrict ownership of those deadly weapons, Representative Alexander Kolodin's Shall Not Be Infringed Act would make it impossible for local prosecutors to go after anyone who has those weapons, even if they're breaking federal law to do so. And that is exactly the point, Culloden said. What this bill says is, if the feds want to infringe on our Second Amendment rights, they can darn well pay for doing that themselves. And we're not going to have Arizona law enforcement do it, the Scottsdale Republican told the Arizona Mirror. Culloden's House Concurrent Resolution 2037 strikes out the entire section of state law that prohibits deadly weapons. If it's taken up by the legislature, it's been assigned to the House Judiciary Committee but not yet considered, and wins support in both the House of Representatives and the Senate, then Arizona voters would have to approve the change in 2026. He said that the ban on any kind of weapon, no matter how dangerous it might be, is a violation of the Second Amendment and something Arizona shouldn't be complicit in. But since he can't do anything about federal laws that overlap with the state laws, Culloden said the job of enforcing banned weapons laws should be solely that of the federal government. Culloden campaigned on upholding the Second Amendment and is a member of the Arizona Citizens Defense League, a nonprofit advocacy group that pushes for gun laws to emphasize criminal misuse over possession. According to his campaign website, Culloden vowed to oppose red flag laws and advance legislation that prevents state resources from being used for federal gun control efforts. What would enforcement after HCR 2037 look like? While certain weapons may still be illegal or severely restricted under federal laws, Culloden's proposal would remove the layer of enforcement that the state prosecutors have. Dr. Robert Spitzer, a political science professor at SUNY Cortland and author of multiple books on gun policy, said he does not anticipate that Donald Trump's administration will prioritize funding a robust Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, ATF. Given the limited enforcement capabilities of the federal agency charged with carrying them out, it would seem to be a de facto open door for people who want to have these kinds of weapons, Spitzer said. That means pressure to enforce bans on fully automatic rifles, rocket-propelled grenades, and other illegal weapons will likely fall on local police departments and prosecutors' offices, Spitzer said. Removing state laws used to do that would leave enforcement solely up to the federal government. Dave Workman, a Washington-based senior editor of thegunmag.com, echoed that a sweeping removal of a state's prohibited weapons ban could create confusion if people think those weapons are now legal. You'd have a potential of Arizona citizens who are just like anybody else who owns a gun, 99.99 times out of 100, they're squeaky clean, law-abiding citizens, Workman said. They just happen to like to shoot weird guns, and they could really run afoul of federal statutes. Calls to the Arizona Law Enforcement Association and Phoenix Law Enforcement Association were not returned, but Culloden said he had not heard any opposition from police groups. When law enforcement is against something, they're not shy about telling us, and I haven't heard from any of them, he said. Grassroots groups ready to oppose resolution. Aaron Earp is the senior policy attorney for Giffords, a gun reform organization led by former U.S. Representative Gabrielle Giffords, a Tucson Democrat who survived an assassination attempt in 2011. A gunman shot Giffords in the head during a massacre as the congresswoman was meeting with constituents. The shooting killed six and wounded 12 others. She founded the advocacy group with her husband, U.S. Senator Mark Kelly, in 2013. Earp said that she has not seen legislation like this in other states, and she called it dangerous. What we've seen from the Trump administration is that they do not appear interested in enforcing any of these types of laws at the federal level, Earp said. Dr. Lisa Kopp decided to volunteer with Arizona's chapter of Moms Demand Action, a group that advocates for public safety measures to prevent gun violence, after the Uvalde, Texas school shooting in 2022. Mass shootings are, of course, devastating and get a lot of press, Kopp said. But it's the everyday gun violence that occurs in the United States that affects most often people of color that also needs attention. Overall, gun deaths have steadily increased in Arizona within the last decade, according to the Arizona Public Health Association's 2023 report on gun violence. In Arizona, black people were 7 times as likely to die by gun homicide than their white counterparts in 2022, according to a Johns Hopkins University study. The report showed that Arizona also had the highest gun homicide rate for Hispanic Latino people in the country in 2022. According to the U.S. Department of Justice's report investigating the Phoenix Police Department, city officials speculated that the reason behind police shootings was, in part, due to Arizona's lax gun laws. Cops said that volunteers with Moms Demand Action planned to speak against the resolution if it's scheduled for a hearing. Any reasonable person who reads this list, I think there would be concern, no matter what your feelings on the Second Amendment is, Cops said. I cannot see people, if they really understood this content, thinking that this is a good idea. Moms Demand Action will join other grassroots groups, including Giffords and Arizonans for Gun Safety, to meet with lawmakers on gun-related proposals later this month, Cops said. What kinds of weapons are restricted? The Arizona Firearms Act imposes restrictions in all states on the sale, transfer, and possession of weapons, including fully automatic firearms, machine guns, short-barreled rifles, rifles with a barrel under 16 inches, short-barreled shotguns, shotguns with a barrel under 18 inches, suppressors, silencers or mufflers, destructive devices, explosives, grenades. Each weapon comes with its own level of restrictions, but in order to legally own any weapons covered by the National Firearms Act, a person must register it with the ATF, pay a tax stamp, and pass a background check. Arizona law prohibits all of the aforementioned weapons unless the owner is specifically licensed or authorized. According to Spitzer, the state restricted suppressors 5 years before the National Firearms Act became law in 1934 and was one of the first states to do so. States like Washington prohibit suppressors unless they are legally registered and possessed in accordance with federal law. Culloden's Shall Not Be Infringed Act did not make that stipulation in its initial draft. Neither did a Senate bill that focuses solely on repealing the state ban on suppressors. But an existing statute says that the prohibited weapons list does not apply to those who have a license. Arizona law also says the Game and Fish Commission shall not adopt or enforce any rule that prohibits the lawful possession or use of a firearm silencer or muffler, including for the taking of wildlife or while hunting. They're very popular with people for hunting, for any number of reasons, none of which involve committing a crime, said Workman. In October, police arrested a man suspected of shooting at a Democratic Party office in Tempe several times, as well as leaving a powder substance on political signs. While the Maricopa County Attorney's Office is pursuing charges, none were tied to the 120 guns, 250,000 rounds of ammunition, body armor, and a grenade launcher found in the suspect's possession, although ATF did take a hold of them. The attorney representing Jeffrey Michael Kelly, 60, told the judge that the weapons were all legally obtained. Kelly faces charges including 1 count of terrorism, 4 counts of unlawful use of an infectious biological substance or radiological agent, 3 counts of discharging a firearm at a structure, 3 counts of unlawfully discharging a firearm, and 1 count of criminal damage. Senate bill focuses on legalizing suppressors. On January 29th, the State Senate Judiciary Committee approved Senate Bill 1014, which was introduced by Flagstaff Republican Senator Wendy Rogers and would decriminalize firearm sound suppressors. During the committee vote, Senator Mark Fincham, a Republican from Prescott, told his colleagues that he owned a suppressor before voting in favor of the bill. Those in favor of legalizing suppressors say they prevent hearing loss and frightening of game. Workman added that they also help maintain goodwill with neighbors who don't have to hear hunters' gunshots while living near public lands. Those in favor of restricting suppressors counter that the sound of a gunshot works to warn others of a threat or to inform hikers of a nearby hunter. Ann Thompson, a volunteer with Arizona's chapter of Moms Demand Action, spoke in opposition to Rogers' bill. Being able to hear the sounds of gunshots could make the difference between life and death, she said. Contrary to what has been argued, silencers are not necessary to protect hearing. In fact, widely available ear protection products work better to protect hearing, Thompson said. Small caliber rifles, air rifles, shotguns, and pistols can generate noise up to 140 decibels. Higher caliber rifles can produce sounds over 175 decibels. According to the American Speech Language Hearing Association, about 140 decibels can permanently damage hearing, even from a single occurrence. Being front row at a rock concert measures in at about 110 decibels. On average, suppressors reduce the noise of a gunshot by 20 to 35 decibels, roughly the same sound reduction as earplugs or earmuffs, according to the American Suppressor Association. A 2016 study published by the American College of Emergency Physicians found that suppressors reduced exposures at the ear between 17 and 24 decibels. Hollywood has mythologized the silencer, said Charles Heller, co-founder and communications director for the Arizona Citizens Defense League. The group supported Rogers' bill and plans to support Culloden's legislation. Arizona also prohibits short barrel rifles, which have a barrel length of less than 16 inches, and short barrel shotguns, which have barrels less than 18 inches. Both weapons are banned because they are easily concealed but have more destructive power than handguns, according to the U.S. Department of Justice. Sawed-off shotguns have been used in crime. Let's be really upfront about it. But whether a gun has a 14-inch barrel or a 12-inch barrel or whatever, the underlying thing is you're still committing a crime, Workman said. If someone commits a crime using a Mossberg 12-gauge pump-action shotgun with an 18-inch barrel on it, they're still committing a crime, he said. That's really where the focus ought to be, not on how long a gun's barrel should be, Workman said. But even Workman said Culloden's proposal to scrap the Arizona ban on improvised explosive devices, such as pipe bombs, as well as certain incendiary devices and chemical compounds, goes too far. Those are not, in my estimation, the kind of arms that would be protected by the Second Amendment, Workman said. Bombs and grenades and stuff like that's a little bit overkill. But Culloden, an attorney who primarily works on elections cases, said he believes explosives are covered by the Second Amendment, which states that a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Shall not be infringed, Culloden emphasized. There's no asterisk there. Activists want boycott of Walmart, Home Depot, over day laborer crackdown. This next story was written by Stephen Lemons and posted on February 5th. On Tuesday, the parking lot of the Home Depot on Thomas Road in Central Phoenix was a hive of activity. More than 50 day laborers were hanging out, seeking to flag down drivers for construction and landscaping work. There were no police in sight. That could change soon, according to pro-immigrant activists. The Phoenix Police Department may soon begin trespassing jornaleros, as the day laborers are referred to in Spanish, which could land them in county jail. There, the jornaleros some of whom are undocumented, would be screened by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and possibly deported. Salvador Reza, a community organizer with the group Barrio Defense Committees, said Phoenix police recently gave him a heads up. The property owners had authorized the department to remove Hornilleros from the shopping center that Home Depot shares with Walmart and other businesses. Reza and other activists said that's a shift in the status quo. They were allowing us to stay here in this area, Reza said of the businesses. But because of the climate today with Donald Trump and the anti-migrant climate, they have decided to sign authority to trespass. One Hornilero, who gave his name as Antonio, said he was 58 and had been doing day labor work as a house painter for 20 years. He spoke in Spanish as Reza translated, saying, "We have the need to work here to survive." Reza and others are now calling for a boycott of those Walmart and Home Depot stores, saying the threat of arrest and the implicit threat of deportation was being used to clear out the Hornilleros. What they don't realize is that we buy from them, Reza said of the businesses. We are the ones that consume here. Most of the people that buy here are Mexicanos or Guatemaltecos, the contractors that hire them, too. Home Depot responds. Reza said police officials told him that there would be a period of education for the day laborers, after which there would be zero tolerance. Asked if they were going to be more aggressive in enforcing trespass laws at the shopping center, Phoenix police chose their words carefully. Police spokesman Sergeant Robert Scherer told Phoenix New Times via email that the department has not changed its policy on trespassing, but he did not answer questions about whether police had been asked for stepped-up enforcement. When a business is open, he wrote, officers will respond to a call for service from the owner or their agent. When responding to a call for trespass at an open business, an officer must contact an owner or their agent to verify that the person the owner wants removed is not a customer or otherwise allowed to be on the property. This verification recognizes that it is the decision of the owner or their agent, not the officer, on who may be present on their private property. Scherer added that a business could also sign an authority to arrest, giving police permission to enforce trespassing on the private property when the business is closed. But he did not say whether that had happened in this case. In an email, Home Depot spokeswoman Beth Marlowe disputed the accusations that the company was seeking to have police trespass day laborers. That isn't accurate, Marlowe wrote via email, adding, as we often do, we're partnering with local law enforcement to prevent issues such as shoplifting and illegal drug use in order to ensure a safe and secure work and shopping environment for our associates and customers. Walmart declined a request to comment on the controversy. Complicating the issue, the properties that Walmart and Home Depot sit on are owned respectively by different companies, which also could have asked police for increased enforcement. Contacted later about the responses from the police and Home Depot, Reza said that the police could be backtracking, but that the boycott was still on for now. Bad old days. The shopping center has been an immigration flashpoint for at least two decades, with Minutemen and nativists showing up to square off with day laborers and their supporters. Fists sometimes flew. Just west of the Home Depot, at 34th Street and Thomas Road, Pruitt's Furniture is covered in going-out-of-business signs. But in the early 2000s, the business was a battleground between the Reza-led Hornilleros and Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio, whose deputies were patrolling, trespassing, and arresting day laborers and anyone who got in their way. Arpaio's targeting of day laborers and his sweeps of Hispanic communities led to the class action lawsuit Melendrez v. Arpaio, in which the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office was found guilty of widespread racial profiling and ordered to comply with a laundry list of reforms. Instituting those reforms has cost taxpayers more than $250 million so far. Joel Cornejo, an activist with the nonprofit group Semillas Arizona, claimed that those bad old days are back again. You see how ICE, the police, the state, is practicing violence against our community everywhere in the nation, he said, adding, we need all our community to defend each other, so we're calling for the boycott. Reza said that if the police trespass the Jornaleros, they can still legally seek work while standing on the sidewalks. That's a right the day laborers won in 2013 with the Ninth Circuit's decision in Valle del Sol v. Whiting. The suit challenged provisions of Arizona's infamous anti-immigration Senate Bill 1070, which would have criminalized seeking work as a day laborer from passing cars. The court found that these parts of the statute violated the First Amendment. If they order the Jornaleros off the property, they can always be on the sidewalk, Reza said. But Thomas Road is a very fast-moving street, he observed, nodding at the traffic. If police force the Jornaleros onto the sidewalk, it would make seeking work a potentially life-threatening scenario. This next story was written by T.J. LeHaru and was posted on February 4th. Abe Hamada gives job to teen behind heinous Jeffrey Epstein signs. Remember that kid who made ridiculous political smear signs connecting a Democratic state senator to Jeffrey Epstein? The one who justified them by falsely claiming that the state senator voted against prosecuting sex crimes against minors? That paragon of truth, Nico Delgado, just landed an internship with another of Arizona's most fact-averse figures, election denier and freshman U.S. Representative Abe Hamada. According to a Delgado post on X, which Hamada retweeted, Delgado started working for Hamada on Monday. Delgado said in a phone interview that he expects to assist constituents and do administrative tasks in Hamada's district office until the summer, when Hamada wants to bring him to Washington, D.C. to intern on Capitol Hill. He also said he lives in Hamada's district and volunteered on his campaign. Hamada's press contacts, Alexis Wilkins and Lori Honeycutt, did not respond to New Times emails for comment. In October, Phoenix New Times reported on the outrageously inflammatory and false campaign signs that the high school senior paid for through his political action committee, NECOPAC, which has spent nearly $10,000 since its creation in June 2024. Most of that money was spent on digital advertising and campaign signs. Delgado was 17 at the time. Nobody's used to this boldness, Delgado told New Times on October. The signs were grossly incendiary and also not true. They took aim at State Senator Christine Marsh, claiming she voted against sending what became Proposition 313 to voters. That voter, or rather that measure, which voters overwhelmingly approved, mandates a life sentence for anyone convicted of child sex trafficking. Some Democrats voted against referring the measure to the ballot, while warning that it could require life sentences for child sex trafficking victims who were coerced into recruiting others. Indeed, the current legislature is now trying to fix that issue. But Marsh wasn't one of them. Marsh and other Democrats objected to the signs, though Marsh wound up losing her seat to Republican Corinne Warner. Delgado claims credit for that, and for flipping other seats in the state legislature, although it's hard to know if his signs and PAC played a decisive role in those results. Even before his signs popped up along Valley roadways, Delgado was something of a MAGA mascot. He's been frequently spotted in a tan suit and red tie, taking pictures with the Arizona Republican Party's notable alt-right figures like Hamada and Kari Lake. Delgado also plans to ramp up his PAC's efforts in the 2026 election. we've got a couple of people that are committing to kind of help us raise a pretty solid chunk of money compared to what we had last time, Delgado said. We're trying to cover all the bases, but expand to those statewide races we didn't have this year. Hamada's first weeks as a congressman have been marked by his deafening silence about Donald Trump's executive order attempting to ban birthright citizenship. Hamada wouldn't be a citizen without birthright citizenship. His parents were undocumented at the time of his birth. Hamada was one of several extremist Republicans running to fill former Representative Debbie Lesko's Northwest Valley seat in a July primary. Hamada got Trump's endorsement and emerged on primary day at the top of the pack over Blake Masters and local elected officials, ensuring an easy victory in the general election and making him one of the youngest members of Congress at age 33. And that brings us to the end of this week's program. Thanks very much for listening to Stories from the Phoenix New Times. Please stay tuned for additional interesting programs. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer, Chip Hawbrook.